Good to see you all spread across this globe of ours. So today on the Jewish calendar is the 8th day of the month of Elul. And believe it or not, tonight is 3 weeks from Rosh Hashanah. So we're into this period of preparation for the high holidays and the time for doing the important work of tshuva, of repentance. Simply put, I think tshuva involves reflection followed by action steps to bring one's life into more alignment with Jewish values, as well as one's personal aspirations and dreams. So, how do we do that? It starts with an openness to taking a hard look, to reflecting and dialogue with oneself and others. So, I'd like to start by taking a look at the parsha, the Torah portion for this week. It's Ki Teitzei, which is found in Deuteronomy 21:10 to 25:19, in case you're interested in looking it up at some point. And the Maimonides, a classic Jewish scholar, points out that there are 72 mitzvot to do in this parsha, which is quite unusual. So it's chock full. And Rabbi Robert Lieb says, the spirit of the laws collectively seem to be saying, quoting Deuteronomy 22:3, you may not hide yourself. You may not remain indifferent. Lo lehit alem, which literally means don't hide yourself. So don't be uninvolved. So it's a call to not avoiding situations. This particular mitzvah, this particular verse was in relationship to holding on to lost items that you might find, whether it was your neighbor's ox or ass, or just an item of clothing that you were required, if you didn't know who it belonged to take it into your household. So you can imagine today that if you find a stray animal or something that looks like it's been dropped, that you're supposed to take it home and hold on to it until someone comes to claim it. I guess in those days, villages were not so big as they are today. So you could expect that at some point, the right person was going to come knocking at your door. But today we might have a whole house full of who knows what. Rabbi Lieb also, in sort of hyperbolic language, he says that this parsha is a blueprint for creating a model society reflecting strict justice, profound compassion. It places the stranger, the orphan, and the widow at the very heart of humanity. It has the highest consideration for people, animals, and property alike. It guarantees individual autonomy, but not at the expense of undermining or subverting collective responsibility. And some of the laws that are included, besides returning lost property, are the requirement that you put a guardrail on your roof. So if someone happens to be up there, they won't fall off. And they were, flat roofs in those days for the most part. So someone might be out there. Giving laborers their wages on time, sharing the harvest with those less fortunate, and helping your neighbor if their animal had fallen, let's say they came across a rut in the road or a hole that you were required to go, regardless of your relationship with that neighbor, and go and help them raise their animal. So there are all these laws, and yet the name of the parsha is Ki Tetzeh, when you go out. And it is, as Rabbi Alan Liu points out, connected to the previous parsha, which is Ki Tavo, when you come, or when it's more of a go to, where this is come away from. And so last week's parsha was about going out to battle. And this week, it's talking about when you come back from battle, from victory. So just to keep that in mind, we'll come back to that. Rabbi Shefa Gold points out that the root of the word mitzvah, since we just noted so many mitzvot in this parsha, that in Arabic, the root means to connect. And so she understands a mitzvah to be something that is a pathway to holiness. That is, that it connects us and gives us opportunity to bring blessing into the world through our actions. So a mitzvah is presenting an opportunity to touch holiness, and then by acting in the way that the mitzvah models or requires or suggests, we're bringing that holiness out into the world. So she says, when we receive or take on a mitzvah as a pathway to holiness, and then step onto that path, we have the opportunity of bringing blessing into the world through our actions. When we perform these actions with heightened awareness and clear intention, simple acts of everyday living can have a transformative impact. And she says that the mitzvot in this parsha, in this Torah portion, are a diverse collection of social, ethical, legal, and ritual laws. She continues, the blessing comes through us when we integrate those qualities of kindness, of generosity, of consideration of the other's needs, of ethical behavior. When we integrate those qualities and begin expressing them through our word, action, and thoughts, we bring this holiness into the world. But in order to do this, we have to first stop and reflect and absorb the deeper meaning of the mitzvah. Take it on to us personally, how it's applied to our life. Because, you know, we don't have an oxen that might fall that we need to return to our neighbor. We don't have a flat roof. So how do these laws, what's the underlying deeper meaning, the underlying principle that we need to make real for our actual life? So she says that the beginning of this parsha, when you go out to battle and then return victorious, that battle isn't just a war, that we have, we'll call them inclinations, ways that we want to behave that are struggles within us. And so when we are dealing with a decision, an ethical way to behave or a way to avoid taking on that behavior, a way to ignore that there's that an internal struggle. And so this isn't just about war. So she says that this first battle is, she points out that when we go into the battle, the commandment is what you do when you return victorious. So really, even though it says when you go into battle, the rest of the pasuk is when you return victorious. And the mitzvah then is about all the ways that you need to reflect on your behavior. And the quintessential mitzvah is talking about that you take you. This is what I'm going to focus on for the next few minutes is written from a male perspective, but let's not focus on that so much as what Shefa, Rabbi Gold, is pointing to, which is the underlying meaning. So when men would come back from battle, they would have what we might call the spoils of war. And the one that's noted here is women that they took captive. In other societies, you could do what you wanted with that woman. In Ki Tetzeh, the law is that you take the woman into your house and she is given time to remove all her sexual attraction of nail polish or jewelry or her hair done in a certain way, her perhaps clothing that attracted you to her is removed and she's given ordinary clothing. And so she is stripped from what might have attracted you in the first place and left to become, instead of a trapping of seduction, she is to become her simplified true essence. And then the requirement is that she's given 1 month, but the man is also given the 1 month. And Rabbi Gold says the woman is given 1 month to set her heart in order. And I'm not entirely sure as a woman reading that exactly what that means. It may be that one reason she's brought back from battle is that she no longer has living male family. And so it's in a way, a way for her to have a way forward is to be taken in by this man, this Israelite man. That's just my theory. In any case, there's this period of time where the man is put in the situation of really reflecting on what it is that he wants from this woman. You know, if he was just in the heat of battle, because it's pointed out that in many societies, you know, men ravish women at the end of battle, and that some say it almost seems like it's in their genes that after they've had all the, you know, the excitement of battle, the adrenaline is flowing, and this is just one of the things they can have. In Jewish law, the man is required to take this step back and to really see the woman as not just a sexual object, and to really think about who she is and who he is and what he wants to do about the situation. The assumption is that he will go in unto her, as the text says, at the end of those 30 days, but with a different approach than if he just took her once the battle was over. So the Rabbi Alan Liu points out in his wonderful book that's, been quoted here so many times, You're Thoroughly Not Prepared. That's not the full title. But it's about preparing for the high holidays. And he points out that you might think it's odd that the Parshiot the Parshiot around the holidays are about these images of war, but he points out that there's a lot of images of war related to the high holidays and struggle and battle. And he points to Psalm 27, which is the psalm that we begin saying in the month of Elul. And just to pick one verse out of many of them that would apply, it says, Hareini Adonai darchecha v'nacheni be'orech mishur l'ma'an. Show me your way, O God, and lead me on a level path because of my watchful foes. That when we are thinking about the changes we want to make during the tshuva process, that there are all these temptations, that these are our foes. There are all these struggles that we come upon, and ways that we might want to stay in denial and not think about how we've behaved in a way that's hurt people, or how we've harmed the earth, or the whole long list. And that the process of tshuva does involve this idea of struggle and battle. So I wanted to share a little story that I found. And the reason for this, I'm bringing this, is because it seems to me that this idea of the man taking 30 days, the man and the woman taking 30 days after battle, is an instruction for mindfulness. It's an instruction to step back from acting immediately and to settle, to take time, to move the distractions out of the way to as much as possible, and to let that influence your behavior. So this little story is really just to show how that kind of a process can have an impact in very small ways, even for school children. So it's told that an inner city school in California, at that school, there was a 5-week experimental program in mindfulness with 5th grade students. The mindfulness coach came twice a week and led 15-minute meditation sessions with a focus on breath and concentration on a single object. The goal was simple. Rather than telling children to pay attention, mindfulness meditation would teach them how to do that. Then the students were asked to apply mindfulness on the school playground, where they were to cultivate compassion and reflect on their emotions before lashing out at someone. After only a few mindfulness sessions, one boy told his classmates, "I was losing at baseball and I was about to throw a bat, but the mindfulness really helped." Another student, when asked to explain mindfulness, said, "It's not hitting someone in the mouth." Though mindfulness can be explained and defined in many ways, these 5th graders offer one way to understand the concept, namely that mindfulness is the ability to make better decisions, which I think is what we're trying to achieve in tshuva, repentance. The reason is simple. When we are mindful, we create a space between a reaction and a response. And in that space, we can access the wisdom that empowers us to move from reaction to reflection to response. Unlike a reaction in which we are controlled by difficult thoughts and emotions, where we are controlled by them, mindfulness creates a gap moment that allows us to control the response. In the gap, we can pause, analyze, and respond in a way that is skillful, positive, and helpful. It's what Shantideva calls keeping a steady mind. So that's a reflection on ourselves, the mindfulness that it takes to work through tshuva. There's another kind of mindfulness that I just wanted to quickly bring to our attention, and then I'm going to end with a poem. And that is from the modality of Musar. And so another type of reflection would be what is called savlanut or patience in Musar language. And the root of the word savlanut, which is patience in Hebrew, is saval, which means to carry, like a porter is carrying something heavy. And savlanut in this formulation means to carry someone's burden, either for them or with them. And so patience is when we, let's say we're annoyed with someone and impatient. If we pause and reflect and take on what is their burden, what are they carrying that might be causing them to lead us to be impatient, whether it's some behavior or it's they just don't understand or whatever it is. If we can stop and share their burden with them, it may change our way of reacting. So that's a more outward type of stopping and reflecting. And when we do the interpersonal work in tshuva, that may be a way of stopping and reflecting that is really helpful. And going back to the captive woman, if the man is seeing the situation from her point of view, if he's carrying her burden, it may change the relationship to a much more compassionate, loving situation. One would hope so. So I want to leave some time for questions. So I'm just going to share this poem that I found that I think is about personal change. It's written by, it was composed by Portia Nelson, and it's called An Autobiography in Five Chapters. Chapter One, I walk down the street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault. It takes forever to find a way out. Chapter Two, I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. I fall in again. I can't believe I'm in the same place, but it isn't my fault. It still takes a long time to get out. Chapter Three, I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I fall in. It's a habit. But my eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault. I get out immediately. Chapter Four. I walk down the same street. There is a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter 5. I walk down a different street. So the floor is open to continue a discussion or to talk about your practice.